Ladies and gentlemen, good day and welcome to Q3 and 9 months FY23 earnings conference call of IOL Chemicals and Pharmaceuticals Limited. From the management, we have Dr. Sanjay Chaturvedi, Executive Director and CEO, Mr. Pradeep Khanna, Chief Financial Officer, and Mr. Abhay Raj Singh, Vice President and Company Secretary. We also have Investor Relations team from Adfactors. As a reminder, all participant lines will be in the listen-only mode and there will be an opportunity for you to ask questions after the presentation concludes. Should you need assistance during this conference call, please signal an operator by pressing star then zero on your touchtone phone. Please note that this conference is being recorded. I now hand the conference over to Dr. Chaturvedi for his opening remarks. Thank you and over to you, sir.
Thank you, Darshan. Good afternoon, everyone. We are very pleased to welcome you all to our third quarter, 9 months that ended financial year 2023 earnings call. I am sure you all must have gone through our quarterly results, numbers, and the investor presentation, which is available on the exchanges as well as on our website. Before we move on to the company's quarter performance, I'd like to dwell a little bit on where the global markets are, how they are developing, and how the Indian market is performing. My colleague, Mr. Pradeep Khanna, our CFO, will then take you through the performance, post which we will open up the forum for the Q&A session. So businesses across the world had a tough ride in 2022 as there was persistent high inflation, continued geopolitical conflict, surge in commodity prices, and overall a tightened monetary policy by most of the central banks that has put pressure on the growth trajectory for most organizations. Towards the end of the year in 2022, some resurgent COVID cases in China and the subsequent disruptions in supply chains have further impacted the global trade and overall investor sentiment. However, there is positive news for the business as the World Bank expects inflation to fall to moderate levels through the next 2 years. It is expected to remain above pre-pandemic levels. In the Indian context, however, the situation is a little more optimistic. For FY23, the GDP growth for India is projected at 6.9% against 6.5%. That was a number given in October of 2022. The report from the World Bank says that India's economy has demonstrated resilience and, you know, despite this challenging environment. We believe that the country's resilience comes from the robust revival in consumer spending, with the retail businesses growing strong, particularly in the third quarter of FY23 on the back of festivities. This momentum has continued since then, and as is evident from various categories like apparel, cosmetics, footwear, and FMCG products growth across the country. For the businesses that your company is in, despite all uncertainties, the business in quarter three improved versus quarter two. The chemicals business had a muted performance, whereas the pharma business outperformed better both in the ibuprofen and the non-ibuprofen portfolio. As you're all aware, the company is building capacities for molecules such as paracetamol, metformin, clopidogrel, and fenofibrate, and this will overall reduce the dependence on ibuprofen. In the specialty chemical segment, the raw material prices for certain products have stabilized, but some are yet to stabilize. We do believe that the worst is over for this segment as the margins have bottomed out for most product lines. We are likely to see some improvement in margins in this segment going forward. As we work on increasing our capacity in specialty chemicals, we expect the challenges to have been taken care of by the industry players with the demand expected to revive from, you know, Q4 and the next financial year onwards. We would get an edge in terms of operational efficiency and higher margins with increased production. During the quarter, your company was also granted a patent for an improved safe process for preparation of certain drugs or formula, Indian Patent Office, that includes Valsartan, Losartan, Irbisartan, Olmesartan, Candisartan, and other certain drugs, which is a class of medicine known as angiotensin II receptor blockers, which is used to treat high blood pressure and heart failure. The company also recently received EU GMP certification from the National Institute of Pharmacy and Nutrition, Hungary. This will help the company in better penetration in European markets for our products. With this, I would now like to hand over to Mr. Pradeep Khanna, our CFO, who will be sharing financial details with you. Over to you, Mr. Pradeep.
Thank you, Dr. Sanjay. Good afternoon, everyone. And thank you for joining us today to discuss our performance for the third quarter ended 31st December 22. I will take you through financial highlights for the third quarter. The total income of the company in quarter 3 of financial year 23 stood at rupees 530 crore as against rupees 564 crore in the corresponding quarter of financial year 22 and rupees 546 crore in previous quarter ended September 22. EBITDA for the quarter was 49.7 crore as against rupees 68.1 crore in the corresponding quarter of financial year 22 and rupees 36.7 crore in quarter second of financial year 23. EBITDA margin for the quarter improved to 9.4% as against 6.8% in the previous quarter. The net profit in the third quarter was rupees 24 crore as against rupees 40 crore in the corresponding quarter of the last year and 15.7 crore in the last quarter ended 30th December 22. Exports for the 9-month period grew 26% to rupees 431 crore as compared to rupees 368 crore in the corresponding period of the last year. With this, we open the forum for question and answer session. Thank you very much.
Thank you very much. We will now begin the question and answer session. Anyone who wishes to ask a question may press star and one on their touchtone telephone. If you wish to remove yourself from the question queue, you may press star and two. Participants are requested to use handsets while asking a question. Ladies and gentlemen, we will wait for a moment while the question queue assembles. Participants, you may press star and one to ask the question. The first question is from the line of Rohit Suresh from Samatva Investments. Please go ahead.
Good afternoon, sir. Thank you for the opportunity. So my first couple of questions on the ibuprofen part. So could you just give us some data in terms of the pricing of ibuprofen in this quarter? And secondly would be, there was an article stating that there was some supply shortages due to excess demand of ibuprofen, especially in China. So what is the current supply demand scenario right now and how do you see it moving forward? And has this resulted in us increasing our exports considering the global shortages? Thank you.
Okay. So the first part of your question regarding the pricing of ibuprofen. Ibuprofen continues to be very stable, you know, between $11 and $12 in the export markets. India prices are slightly lower than that. But this pricing is very stable. We don't anticipate it going down at all. Coming back to your question about some supply chain disruption, yes, we've seen those reports. The demand increase that we see worldwide is, you know, it's too early to tell whether this is a real revival or this is, you know, marginal increase. There has been a marginal increase, though. And regarding the disruptions in China, because we are currently not approved for exports to China, we have not been a beneficiary of the supply constraint situation there yet.
Great, so that's it from my side. Thank you.
Okay.
Thank you. Ladies and gentlemen, you may press star and one to ask the question. The next question is from the line of Neelam Punjabi from Perpetuity Ventures. Please go ahead.
Thanks a lot for the opportunity. So, my first question is a follow-up of the previous participant's question on ibuprofen. So, what would be our capacity utilization of ibuprofen during the quarter? And what would be our average volumes that we would have sold for ibuprofen?
So, we are currently running at an average asset utilization that is north of 80%. And going forward, we expect this number to improve.
So, sir, you had mentioned in the previous call that we want to take this utilization to 95% at peak. So, by when do we expect to reach that kind of levels?
It might take another few quarters to get there, but we are on our path there. The demand seems to be picking up, and last quarter versus this quarter, our demand has been substantially up, and we expect that to further go up in Q4 and beyond.
Got it. That's helpful. Next, on the non-ibuprofen API sales, so I see that on a QOQ basis, this revenue has come down in Q3 versus Q2, FY23. What are the reasons for the same, if you can highlight?
So in this quarter, we have come down a little bit, and that was we were in the midst of expanding capacity for one of our products, so we had to take some downtime to put more equipment there and stabilize the process at higher capacity. But if you look at it on a year-by-year basis, the non-ibuprofen business has already delivered in 9 months what it delivered in the entire financial year last year. So we are on a very, very good growth path for the non-ibuprofen portfolio.
Got it. And, sir, had we not taken the plant shutdown for upgradation, what would have been our sales? How much would it be higher, if you can just give a bit of directional sense?
So, this year we expect our non-ibuprofen business to touch something in the range of maybe 500 crores. So I think most of the increase that you will see will happen in Q4 now that the plant has been stabilized. So, obviously next year we will expect a higher number than 500 crores.
Got it. Okay. Directionally, sir, in the medium term, are we confident of doing this 500 crore base at 20-25% going forward?
I don't want to give a number whether it will grow at 20% or 25%, but needless to say, we expect a lot of our growth in our API, in our pharma portfolio, to come from the non-ibuprofen APIs. On the ibuprofen part, we are focused more on improving the quality of the business. As you can understand, if we are already running well above 80% asset utilization, going even 10-12% up, 15% up will only add marginally to the business. The real growth is going to come from the non-ibuprofen portfolio.
Got it. Okay. And so what would be our capacity utilization on the non-ibuprofen portfolio currently?
So that's a very hard number to answer because a lot of the plants are multi-product plants. So, asset utilization makes sense when you have purely dedicated plants. But when you share products in a plant, sharing any data on asset utilization can be very misleading.
Got it. So last quarter you had mentioned that our non-ibuprofen API portfolio is not making profits currently. Are we still there, and when do we expect the profitability to improve for the non-ibu sales?
So, the unabsorbed cost is going down every quarter, and I think in the next coming quarter, the entire segment will turn profitable.
Got it. Okay. I'll join back the question queue. Thank you.
Thank you. Ladies and gentlemen, you may press star and one to ask the question. Next question is from the line of Sajal Kapoor, independent investor. Please go ahead.
Yeah, thanks for taking my question. Hello, Dr. Chaturvedi. I have tracked the chemicals and API space for almost 2 decades now. This industry in the past has been badly bruised by various unfair practices originating from China, right? I also know that it takes several years to innovate a new cost-effective synthesis route and commercialize those filings, especially in the regulated markets like the Europe and the U.S. We have all sorts of regulatory compliance restrictions as well. So in summary, chemicals API is not an easy business. So my question to you, Dr. Chaturvedi, is what are those changes that you designed and implemented since you joined IOL, and what are those changes where management is still focusing on, working on, that are not yet visible in the reported numbers?
You know, first of all, thank you for your insightful comments, Sajan. I will say that a specialty chemicals and an API business is a lot like an iceberg. The financial numbers that you see don't quite articulate the, you know, hordes of employees and other stakeholders that actually enable these numbers. So you're absolutely right in your assessment. But I think, you know, it would be unfair for me to say what are the changes that I have brought about, because, you know, IUL is an evolving organization and we are not a personality-dependent organization. What we do is collective decision-making, consensus building based on the management team members. And the path that we've taken last couple of years is to grow the pharma business, focus on quantity and quality of the non-ibuprofen portfolio, and focus mostly on the quality of the ibuprofen portfolio. So, you know, we keep adding more and more products. If you see, you know, historically we had only one or two products approved for regulated markets, but, you know, we are filing about four DMFs every year over the last 2 years. So as these products pick up in regulated markets, of course, the CEP approvals are also coming in. We will be pushing a lot more into the regulated markets. So you will see our exports grow, and you will see a de-risking in the entire portfolio as we add more and more products. And now we are going to be doing that on the chemical side as well.
Right. And what sort of execution risk, if any, do you foresee, Dr. Chaturvedi, in terms of actually putting this strategy that the team is working on over the next, let's say, 3 years? We all could see the benefits out of it. What are, you know, those top two, three risks that can potentially jeopardize the execution and the results that we all expect?
So I would say, you know, the two top-level risks that I see from an execution standpoint, and these are, again, not unique to IUL, for any player in the API industry, the number one risk, of course, is, you know, you could have a situation like ranitidine where, you know, kind of overnight the market went away. So, you know, we have a list of products where, you know, if any of those products was hit by something like that, that's kind of one risk. But, you know, we operate in that environment just like any other API player. The second risk that I think about is because we don't have, you know, hundreds of products in our portfolio, we have, you know, we do few things. Not able to scale up and get the right quality of the product, that could be a hurdle. And therefore, what we do is, you know, we work on the products very diligently in our R&D and then our pilot and run multiple trials before we take it for manufacturing. So we have a risk mitigation strategy there. But is there a risk in, you know, building a business with few products? Certainly. But I think the first risk that I talked about, which is completely external, there's not much anyone can do about it. But the second risk that I highlighted, we have risk mitigation strategies in place, and we are very confident of mitigating those.
That's very thoughtful and helpful, and Dr. Chaturvedi. I've got one more question, the last one, I promise. Clearly private equity has been very active in the API space in the recent years, and our competitors are also on a capex spree, so to speak, and expanding both the capabilities and the capacities, right? So both these combinations of, you know, the private equity is so very active, so perhaps they see some opportunity. That's the reason they are deploying so much capital into this industry, and our competitors are also expanding. What do you think it means for the industry as a whole, and particularly for IOL? Thanks.
Okay, so there are two questions embedded there. One is on the private equity piece, and the second is on the capex piece. See, when private equity goes into an industry and tries to create, you know, as we've been talking about API platforms, I think it's a very positive development, because overall they sense opportunity and growth in this particular segment. Now, when I look at CapEx, yes, a lot of our competition has been deploying CapEx, and we've been deploying CapEx too. On an average, we do about 150 crores of CapEx every year, and we do that mostly through accrual. So we've not had to, you know, take on any debt for that. And, you know, currently we have certain spare capacity, and we don't feel the need to deploy more capital right away. In fact, you know, some of the CapEx that we've deployed this year have actually been on what I call non-production-related assets like, you know, ETP, environment, you know, ZLD discharge. We are building a new warehouse. You know, we put money into R&D and so forth. So all of those things are really helpful in supporting and creating and building the business, but they don't directly go into production.
Right. That's very helpful, Dr. Chaturvedi. I'll fall back in the queue. Thank you.
Sure.
Thank you. Ladies and gentlemen, you may press star and one to ask the question. Next question is from the line of Niharika, Mikuras Investments. Please go ahead.
Hi. Thank you for the opportunity. So my question is regarding the chemical division. I just want to understand how are the prices faring now? And I believe in last quarter you have said that prices are moving positively, but still we have done loss on an EBIT level. So can you just give some clarity on
I don't quite catch your question, Niharika. Can you please repeat your question?
So this is regarding the chemical division. So last quarter, I believe you had said that prices are moving positively for us and quarter three should be better than quarter two. But even then, in chemical division, we have done a loss on EBIT level. So I just want to understand how is the demand and pricing right now and how is the pricing for ethyl acetate and acetic acid moving?
Okay. So, you know, the demand is fairly stable. We don't expect volatility in the demand. Coming on to the pricing, obviously, you know, we are not back to the profit level that we would like to be, but Q3 has certainly been better than Q2. And we're confident that Q4 will be better than Q3. Regarding the pricing, what is more important than pricing is the delta, you know, the pricing of both ethyl acid as well as acetic acid. They kind of move in sync, although there is some kind of a phase lag. So we are currently at a situation where acetic acid prices are holding stable around, you know, 40 rupees a kg. And ethyl acid prices are stable at, you know, 83, 84 rupees a kg level today. And that should be, you know, this gives us comfort that, you know, the quality of the business and the profitability will improve.
So we're in, like, middle of quarter four. So how do you think, will we be able to kind of at least do profit on EBIT level or still it's something we are planning to achieve, say, coming financial year?
Well, we will certainly do, you know, better and, you know, historically, we've made money in this business, so there is no reason for us not to be profitable.
Okay. And now, I want to understand something on inventory also. Are we holding any higher price inventory as of now in the books? And how many days of inventory do we have on our books?
So, you know, on the finished goods, on the chemical side, we hardly hold any inventory. You know, we run kind of full capacity and we don't hold any finished goods inventory. We do hold some inventory of raw material, so that is imported. And that's typically, you know, a few months, so it's pretty manageable.
Pardon, how many months of inventory do we hold, raw material?
A few months.
Okay, and on the pharma side, how much of inventory do we have in our book? Month-wise?
So 1 to 2 months.
Yeah, 1 month inventory is what we carry typically.
Okay, and update on the CAPEX, how much have we spent on the CAPEX as of now? Because our target was around, I think, 300 odd crores this year or something. And the status of all the CAPEX that is going on our Western India side and all of that.
We spent close to 150 crores this year, and that's what we typically do in a year.
And like what is the... So we were planning to do some Western India, some expansion. So what is the status of that? And also on ethyl capacity expansion. So are we on track to complete it by quarter four, the ethyl expansion?
No, we are not doing any ethyl acid expansion as of now. Instead, we are, you know, changing the product mix on the chemical side. And, you know, you'll be hearing more about it at our next meeting, next quarterly meeting.
Okay, and on pharma side, what kind of capacity utilization are we having as of now?
So as I said, you know, I answered this question earlier. Asset utilization makes sense when you've got dedicated plants. So in terms of ibuprofen, we are going to go well above 80% asset utilization. But the other plants are multi-purpose, multi-product, so asset utilization is perhaps not as useful a metric.
Okay, so this multi-purpose, are we talking on the chemical side? Ibuprofen I got is 80%. What about the other chemical?
Multi-purpose plants, we are talking on the pharma side.
Okay, and on the chemical side, what is the
asset? The plants are dedicated.
And the capacity utilization on those would be?
They are running well above 95%.
Okay, that's helpful. And also, on the last question from my side would be on, I think last quarter we had some patent, process patent on sitagliptin, and this time we have something on losartan. So what kind of benefit do we expect from these patents? So anything on the top line, or I just want to understand the benefit of getting these patents on us.
So the benefit of patent is, you know, it prevents someone else from doing it. It does not give you the right to do it. So I think that's a very simple way to understand it. And in terms of the commercial benefit for the sartans will be when we offer the product that has lower impurity levels than competition. And on the gliptin side, the benefit that we will offer is, you know, an environmental benefit because you will be using slightly less raw material, and that will give you some benefit in your cost as well.
Okay. That was it from my side. Thank you.
Thank you. Next question is from the line of Surya Patra from Philip Capital. Please go ahead.
Thanks for this opportunity, sir. My first question is on the market mix of your APIs currently. At least in terms of the advanced market versus the emerging market. And as an extension to that, I just wanted to understand, I think you have taken a couple of initiatives to enhance your positioning in the advanced market. So, and also acquired or kind of invested some strategic stake acquisition that you have done in one of the U.S. company. So how all these are like connected to each other, and what is your advanced market initiatives and goal going ahead, if you can elaborate a bit.
Okay. So I'll break down the question into two parts. There are two, I think, overarching questions that you have is, what's our plan to grow in regulated markets? That's one.
Yes.
And the second question that you've asked is leading to our investment in the U.S. company, how that's going to help us into regulated markets.
Yeah, and also the market mix currently. In terms of revenue.
Yeah. So, you know, if I look at overall my market mix, I would say broadly 30% of my revenue comes from exports.
Okay. Okay.
Yeah. It's about 27% comes from exports.
It is about APIs only, sir?
This is overall, everything all put together.
No, in fact, for API... Is it possible?
Yes. For API only, this number would be slightly higher. It could be 30% or higher, 35% maybe. And in that, if I look at my split between, you know, emerging markets and regulated markets, most of my exports are actually in emerging markets right now. And that's understandable because if you look at my entire product portfolio, I have approvals for like two products for the U.S. markets, and the other CEPs I've started to get in the last few quarters. And as you are well aware, Surya, you know, in this industry, after you get the CEP approvals, that's when, you know, the game of promoting these products to customers really begins. So it'll take a few more quarters, but our goal is really to, you know, improve our market share in the regulated markets. And, you know, we are well on track for that. The second part that you talked about, our investment, that investment is in an organization that has essentially a technology platform. And at this point, we don't anticipate that giving us revenue in the
regulated markets right away. We've taken a minority position. And, you know, we are doing an in-depth study to figure out, you know, what we should, how we can monetize that technology. So it will take a little bit of time before we can answer that question. But that investment is not going to help me sell more APIs into the regulated market. That's not the intent.
Okay. My second question is on the about the API industry a bit. See, in the current time frame, in fact, we are witnessing underperformance across the world by API players or even the intermediate players. So, what should be attributed to this kind of underperformance? Whether it is the rationalization of inventory post the COVID period, or it is the energy crisis, what we have witnessed in the Europe, who are generally believed to be one of the key lead market for all these APIs and intermediate, or it is the, given the uncertainties that is prevailing in the market. So what is really the real concerning fact that led to this kind of underperformance by almost everybody? And how sustainable this underperformance or these challenges are likely to be for the API and intermediate play?
Okay. So, first of all, you know, let me preface my answer by saying what you are calling underperformance depends what are you comparing it with, you know. So, if you go back to the performance of the API industry 4 years ago, it is not underperformance. If you compare it to a year and a half ago, it is underperformance.
Yes.
So clearly, you know, what happened during the COVID period was not just direct COVID-related products, but overstocking of products in general. So overall, there was a surge in the performance of the API industry. So if you look at, you know, some of the leading API players, as the COVID products have got away, they've taken a massive hit in their profitability. I think the framework I would like to use is that at equilibrium, you know, we leave COVID aside, this is an industry that will run at an average EBITDA of, you know, 12 to 15%. Some companies will give you maybe 20, 25, and then there are others that will give you closer to 8 or 10. So that's kind of where this industry is, and that's where it has been historically as well. So, you know, an EBITDA number of 15% is an average performance that you should expect from this industry.
Okay. So largely it is the rationalization post.
So, yes, sorry to interrupt you, but your voice is breaking. May I request you to come in a better reception area?
Yeah. Okay. Yeah. So, I'm asking. Yeah, am I audible?
Hear you now.
Okay. Inventory rationalization post the COVID period, that has been the one key reason for the kind of sequential decline in the industry performance. That is what we can say. Right, sir?
Yes, absolutely. And you know, in this industry, Surya, business improvement happens in years, not in quarters.
Exactly.
So, you know, IUL, along with a lot of our credible peers, we've made giant strides in improving our product portfolio, putting up capacity for that, going after regulatory approvals. So you will see the impact of all these things in the coming few quarters.
Okay. Second point is that, see, while we have witnessed the volume decline, alongside margin has been a concern. So, it is obviously the input cost and all that would be one concerning fact. But alongside, I think API industry is to some extent energy intensive, as well as the bulk of the activities that would be happening. So hence, the freight cost, which had gone up quite significantly, that would also be a kind of a relevant cost concern for the period. So may I know, the put together energy cost as well as the freight would be what proportion of the total revenues at the current time frame?
So I don't have that number off the top of my head, Surya, but you know, there has been easing of pricing both on the logistics front as well as the energy front. So, you know, that will certainly help boost margins. But, you know, you talked about a decline in volumes. There has actually been, you know, for IOL, we've not declined in volume. In fact, if you look at our business, 3 months, you know, 3 quarters of this year, we've given pretty much the same kind of performance that we gave last year.
Yeah.
And this is a backdrop where for on the chemical side, our flagship product ethyl acetate, the prices dropped by more than 30%. On paracetamol, the prices have dropped again, you know, by similar numbers, 30%. In metformin, the prices have dropped about 20-25%. Ibuprofen has seen a very modest decline or maybe a flat. So it's actually our volumes have gone up to deliver that level of performance. And it's the input costs that have put pressure on the margins.
Okay, okay. And just last point from my side, sir. See, in fact, the various the recent articles, recent data points indicate that there is a kind of a sudden surge in the demand for, let's say, all the pain management products like, let's say, analgesics and all that. Again, acute segment like ibuprofen, paracetamol, naproxen, and suddenly the prices of those have gone up. And this China opening up also is not helping that. Rather, it is creating a condition where the prices are only moving up. So do you think this price recovery is a kind of a normalization thing, or it is a kind of, even if it is happening, it is a one-off thing?
I think it's a one-off thing, Surya, because there is no fundamental underlying reason why there should be a sudden surge in demand for these kinds of products or increase in prices. So it's a one-off thing and it will stabilize.
Okay, okay. Sure, sir. Yeah. Thank you, sir. Thanks a lot.
Thank you. Ladies and gentlemen, you may press star and one to ask a question. Next question is from the line of Sheikh Mohammed, individual investor. Please go ahead.
Hello, good afternoon, sir. Thank you for the opportunity. Sir, my question is, what's your next quarter guidance? Means, actually, from last 3 to 4 quarters, I'm listening that we are coming into double-digit margins, but I'm not able to see it. So what's your next quarter guidance, sir?
So if you, you know, what I will say is I will repeat that, yes, we will be going into the double-digit area, and we are almost at 10% now, which is significantly better than where we were in Q2. So, you know, directionally, I don't want to speculate and draw a trend line between two data points, but, you know, all the indications based on our portfolio, what our customers are telling us, our order book and everything, indicates that, you know, the worst is behind us and things are improving now.
So my second question is regarding the investment in the Western India. I think this is the third time asking the same question. First time you told it is about this coming in next few quarters. Second time you told in few weeks, but still there is no update on the land purchase or anything regarding the Western side investment.
Mm-hmm. So, see, we are in the process of studying that. It's currently, you know, the situation right now, as you can imagine, in current macroeconomic environment is we feel that, you know, we are better off postponing the investment a little bit and making the right call. And in terms of CapEx, you know, we have enough investment that we are making in our current facility that can help manage the growth for at least the next year or so.
Okay. Sir, another question is, I think we have got so many approvals in last two to three quarters. I think EQDM for pantoprazole and levetiracetam, then patent for the patent drug, Euro GMP certification, then Korean FDA approval, sitagliptin, Russian authority, and I think so many approvals we will get. Then we will get benefits from all those approvals. Because I think still we are lacking behind the margins, what we are getting in the 2021?
So, you know, let me begin by saying that in the API business, you know, the regulatory approvals is the first step towards establishing your business in regulated markets. So if you look at, yes, we got the CEP approvals, we just got the EU GMP certificate from the Hungarian authority last month. Now our BD teams and front-end teams are aggressively working with customers. And clearly, you know, even after you give the API, you give your exhibit batches, it will take some time for stability testing. So, you know, you can expect a lag of a few quarters. And, you know, this is not something that is specific to IUL. This is just how the industry is. But the good news is that we've got the right tools to play with. We've got the right products, we've got the right approvals, we've got the right team who's talking to the right set of customers, and now it's a question of time before you start to see the commercial benefit of all this.
Okay. Thank you.
Thank you. Next follow-up is from the line of Neelam Punjabi from Perpetuity Ventures. Please go ahead.
Yeah, thanks for the follow-up. So my question is that given we are, you know, looking at regulatory market foray for our API business, are all our API units approved from US FDA or are we expecting any inspection anytime soon?
So, you know, when I talk about regulated markets, it's a mix of both European market as well as US markets. So if I look at from a European standpoint, all my facilities are currently approved. When I look at the U.S. market, all of them are not approved as yet. I've got approvals for my ibuprofen and paracetamol. And the other, we are expecting that, you know, at some point the U.S. FDA auditors will review our facility. But we don't have any official intimation from them yet.
Got it, sir. So for our foray into regulated markets, is our target more towards Europe or even we are targeting US markets?
So clearly, you know, regulated markets, we will target both US and Europe. And it's a question of time, you know, once we get the US FDA approvals for some of the other products. But till then, we've got the CEPs in place and the European business will certainly very soon.
Got it. Okay. Secondly, sir, on Metformin, you mentioned that the prices have corrected by 20-25%. Could you please also give a update on the input price DCDA? How are the prices right now and has the profitability improved for this product?
So, you know, DCDA continues to be a pretty volatile product. I think in the last 1 year, I've seen prices of DCDA ranging from $3,500 a ton all the way to, you know, $2,200 a ton. So it's really a question of having your right sourcing strategy in place with the right partners to be able to manage your profitability in Metformin. And we are well on track for that.
Okay. Next one on sitagliptin, you had mentioned that we'll be looking to launch this product soon. So have we launched it and do we look at it as a sizable opportunity for us?
So, you know, we've not commercially launched the product yet. The product is under pilot. So technically it is under development and we started to work with customers and, you know, depending on, you know, we are not, as you can imagine, this is a product that is being offered by several of our peers and competition as well. It's too early for us to say what kind of market share we will get and whether it will be sizable.
Okay. Okay. Next, sir, on our CAPEX targets for FY24 and 25, if you can give that number and what could be the key areas of capital investments going forward?
So, you know, our investment areas going forward will be, you know, typical numbers would be around 150 crores a year. And, you know, they would go into a mix of both pharma and a little bit into chemicals as well.
Okay. Lastly, sir, if you can just highlight what would be the our net cash as on December?
Net cash as on December. Around 300 crores.
Okay. Great. Thank you so much.
Thank you. Next question is from the line of Mahesh from UTI Asset Management. Please go ahead.
Hello, namaste, sir. Just one question from my end. How are you looking upon this paracetamol? You expanded the capacity from 1800 to 3600. So I would like to have your commentary on entire its pricing, the volume. What are your expectations in the time coming ahead? Thanks.
So, you know, paracetamol, we've expanded our capacity, and as you rightly said, we are at a capacity of 3,600 tons now. So this is not just the installed capacity, but the process and everything has been stabilized. And in the coming months, that's the kind of capacity that we will be running the plant at. And in terms of pricing, in the domestic market, you know, the prices range anything from 530 rupees to 550 rupees as of now. And you know, this is a kind of a product where the prices change on a frequent basis. So this, I'm only talking about the India prices. Of course, the export prices are slightly higher. So this is typically the price. And if you look at it last year, the same product was selling at, you know, north of 700 rupees. So there is a fair amount of volatility, but that volatility tracks the volatility in the raw material prices, and one needs to manage that.
Okay. So, sir, what capacity utilization do you expect 1 year down the line on paracetamol? If you can give it a rough.
It's certainly well north of 90%.
90%. Okay. And, sir, just one more question on... In chemical area, what are we planning to, apart from ethyl acetate, what are the segments we are trying to enter into?
I think most of them are, I don't call them segments, I call them, you know, derivatives or chemistries related to what we already do.
That's what I was asking.
Isobutyl benzene, we've got acetyl chloride, we've got MCA, monochloroacetic acid, we've got, you know, ethyl acetate. So we'll be working around these chemistries.
Okay, sure, thanks.
Thank you. Next question is from the line of Yogesh Tiwari from Arihant Capital. Please go ahead.
Yeah, good afternoon, sir. Am I audible?
Yes.
Sir, my first question was, is there any seasonality around ibuprofen? Like Q3 is a little soft and then it increases around January, Feb. So is there any seasonality around ibuprofen?
No, not really. We don't see any seasonality in ibuprofen.
And sir, I just wanted to understand... what are the demand drivers for ibuprofen in export markets like Europe and Southeast Asia?
You said Europe and Southeast Asia?
Yes, sir.
The European markets in terms of size are much bigger than Southeast Asia. And in terms of demand drivers, I think we are back to what it was at pre-COVID levels now. So... it's a fairly stable demand where the growth rates are single digits.
And, sir, are you seeing any increase in demand and volumes in the current quarter compared to Q3 in both ethyl acetate and ibuprofen in terms of volume?
So our volumes in ethyl acetate are very flat. We've been running at pretty high asset utilization, so there is no change there. Yes, there has been a bit of a demand increase on ibuprofen, and you know, we have the capacity to cater to that.
And sir, lastly, with exposure in the exports market, like we have some exposure to Turkey as well. So are we seeing any supply disruption in fab because of the current...
Sorry to interrupt you, but your voice is coming very muffled. Can I request you to keep the mic away from your mouth?
Yeah, am I okay now?
Hello, slightly yes. Better.
Okay. So just to understand that given the current scenario in Turkey, and we have some exposure in Turkey as well, so is there any supply disruption for our product in Turkey?
It's too early. I suppose, you're talking in the backdrop of the earthquake that happened in Turkey recently.
Yes, sir.
Yeah, so it's too early for us to make a comment on that. But we don't expect there to be much disruption in supply chain.
Sure. Thank you, sir. That's all from my side. Thanks.
Thank you. Next question is from the line of Vishan from Systematics. Please go ahead. Vishal, may I request you to unmute your line from your side and go ahead with your question, please?
Am I audible now?
Yes.
Yeah. So with respect to the regulated market opportunity, wanted to understand whether you are currently supplying to India-based customers who in turn sell formulations to the U.S. So like in case of ibuprofen, a large part of the U.S. formulation demand is being catered by Indian players. So are those customers your customers currently?
Yes, Vishal. Absolutely. You're absolutely spot on. One is to cater to the regulated markets by supplying the API directly to the regulated markets. The other is to supply that API to Indian manufacturers who make the finished formulation in India and supply that formulation to the regulated markets. We cater to both customers.
And you are also you are already supplying to the India-based names.
Yes.
Okay. And is there a pricing advantage that you get when you supply to say an Aurobindo who's supplying ibuprofen to the U.S. market? So is the price higher versus other domestic customers?
So what I would say is that the price depends really on the quality of the product. A USP product that has a better impurity profile than an IP product, you are going to get a premium on that, whether you supply that product in India or you supply that product directly overseas.
Mm-hmm. But currently your average realization for ibuprofen, so when I compare it to a competitor average realization, it appears to be lower, significantly lower. Any reason for that based on the export data?
I'm not sure that's necessarily true, and what I'd like you to do is take a look at not just the price realization but the profit realization, because I think the question to be asked is, if my peers and competitors are selling at a higher price, why are they not more profitable?
Right. Yeah, that's also true. Correct. Got it. Thank you.
Thank you. Next question is from the line of Gautam Gosar from Perpetuity Ventures. Please go ahead.
Hi, sir. Thank you for the opportunity. So my question is on the chemical business. So given that the ethyl acetate prices have been flat quarter on quarter, and you mentioned that the demand has been largely stable, so what led to degrowth in the business on a sequential basis?
Can you repeat your question for a moment?
So my question is, given the ethyl acetate prices were flat on a quarter-on-quarter basis, and you mentioned that the demand has been stable for the business, so what led to the degrowth on a sequential basis for ethyl acetate business?
So actually, I think a slightly lower volume, and also the pricing was not completely flat. The pricing was slightly lower in Q3 versus Q2.
Okay. And so given that in Q2 we had some high-cost inventory as well, so we are behind that, so the margins should have been better in the chemical business. But we've given a negative EBIT margins in the chemical business. So what has been the major reason for that?
So I think it's a question of just eating out all that inventory. And, you know, we had a few more days of downtime for maintenance in this quarter. With all of this behind us, we should be back to profitability in Q4.
Okay, got it. Thank you.
Thank you very much. I now hand. Thank you, everyone, for your participation in the Q3 and 9 months FY23 earnings call of IOL Chemical and Pharmaceuticals. In case of any further queries, you may get in touch with the investor relations team at AdFactors. I now hand the conference over to Dr. Sanjay Chaturvedi from IOL Chemicals and Pharmaceuticals Limited for closing comments.
Thank you all very much for joining us today to discuss our quarterly performance. And as we discussed, we have shown considerable improvement in Q3 versus Q2. And we feel remain optimistic for growth for both our businesses. However, there is some uncertainty that persists and disruptions continue. And there is no, you know, Russia-Ukraine dispute continues as well. As far as we are concerned at IULCP, we are focused on improving our product portfolio, working on developing backward integration models to overall reduce our dependence on import of raw materials. And we believe that in the coming few quarters, you will be able to see the strategy paying off well. And this will help the company in getting value addition for all our stakeholders. With this, I would like to conclude the call. Once again, thank you all for your time and have a nice day.
Thank you very much. On behalf of IOL Chemicals and Pharmaceuticals Limited, that concludes this conference. Thank you for joining us. You may now disconnect your lines. Thank you.